Welcome, Andrew.
Ben.
Good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. And off the bat, thank you for bringing so much awareness to the buyer's agent space. I think you've done a great job over the last 5 to 8 years that you've been building the BAI Institute.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, it's always good to have good role models like you taking charge. And really, I feel like leading the way. I mean, we don't know each other well. I've obviously observed you online, and it really looks like you're doing big things in terms of, not only, I think, growing awareness for the industry, what you're doing, but just, I think, lifting the standards I see of the professional standards of the industry.
Thank you. That means a lot, because professionalism is certainly up there with one of the most important things when it comes to my opinion of buyer's agents and real estate in general.
Let's go back in time. I want to rewind the clock to 2010. You sent some information on yourself and I've reviewed it, but I was fascinated because you obviously co-founded a charity that was in the MS space, the multiple sclerosis space. And I just wanted to get some insight as to like how that came about.
Yeah, so 5 years before 2010, I left Melbourne and picked up a job on cruise ships around the world. So I was lucky enough to work for a company called Royal Caribbean International. And after traveling the globe throughout Mediterranean, Scandinavia, Central America, Alaska, the Caribbean, I met a girl and she came up to me. We built a relationship and she had an idea of creating a 501c3 nonprofit organization to raise funds and awareness for a disease that her mother had, which was multiple sclerosis, which you mentioned earlier. And I didn't hesitate to say yes, I'd help out, and volunteered. So 2010, we raised some money to fund the charity. And Ashley at the time had the goal of running from San Francisco in California all the way to New York City, and I helped co-found that charity, and I supported her along that journey with social media, cooking, cleaning, PR, and keeping her safe and alive, because running across an entire continent, or not continent, the country, is certainly challenging and dangerous. We managed to raise $100,000 at the time, and that was just after the GFC, and it was pretty tough economically in America. That was one of the biggest fork in the road moments that I've had in my life, and it certainly changed my perspective on what I could achieve in my own personal life moving forward from there.
You mentioned that it was a life-changing experience in the sense it shifted your perspective on what's really achievable. And I guess my question on that is, you were obviously supporting your partner. You're obviously both going on this huge mission, right? Like that's insane what you guys did. Was it because you got to witness what she was able to break through while you were supporting that you then were able to expand, I guess, your belief system around what you can do?
That's certainly a huge part of it. When you witness someone put their body through 5 to 6 marathons a week for 6 months, 5,555 kilometers, you realize that the human body is capable of so much more than we actually think from a physical standpoint of view. And obviously there's a mental element that comes with running as well. So witnessing the physical and the mental side of things, there was challenges along the way. It just changed my entire perspective on life, what I could achieve, and it just raised my standards on what I wanted to achieve out of life.
Makes sense. So that lady, is she your current life partner now?
No, she's not. The charity is still going to today, and it's raised in excess of $10 million, which is unbelievable, because in the beginning it was only $100,000 in the first year. So she's not my life partner, but we are in contact, I wouldn't say frequently, but I'm still watching from afar, and it's amazing to think that the charity's still going, because she had this crazy idea that she wanted to continue to run every year herself. And I was like, that is not possible, like, because physically you would, your body wouldn't be able to cope. And my idea was to turn it into a relay event. And subsequently she's done that. So now there's about 20 to 30 people each year that have to raise a minimum amount of money to participate in the event to run across the country, and they all do a leg. So it's a lot more sustainable. And now she's just the CEO and the founder and runs it from afar, which is brilliant.
Yeah, phenomenal, phenomenal. And good on you for just saying yes and stepping up and getting involved. That's huge. So you then obviously moved back to Australia, to Victoria, and then from what I understand, you became a selling agent and an auctioneer. Is that correct?
That's correct, yep. 2010, I started out as a personal assistant, and it was a role that I was going to fulfill for 6 to 9 months before moving back to America to live with Ashley and build on that charity and our life in America. But for a few different reasons, it didn't play out like that. And I channeled all my energy towards the real estate industry, started out as a personal assistant to a director. And then I think I worked at two different companies in selling for 2 years each. And then I worked for an advisory company in buyer advocacy for about 7 weeks. And that was the sliding doors moment to move on and found Industry Insider.
So rewinding back to when you got into, you were working on the sell side, you were obviously a PA, and then you obviously, moved up the ranks there. Were you observing at that early stage already that buyers were neglected, they needed help? Like, was that an observation that you were starting to unpack?
Yeah, probably the first 2 years I was very green and learning. I was completely new to the industry, didn't really understand how to value property from day one, but learned that quite quickly. And it became very apparent to me that the industry was heavily favoured and geared towards the sellers. The rules, the regulations, the quoting, the agents, the representation. And it was when I was working at the second company that I decided that I was looking around at the people in the area who were senior to me. I was early 30s at the time, and some of them were in their 50s, late 60s. And the question I asked to myself was, did I want to be doing the same thing that I'm doing now in 20, 30 years? And the answer was flat out no. Nothing wrong with selling in an area for 20, 30 years. But I decided that I wanted to explore Melbourne and explore helping buyers and really level the playing field, because that's basically what we do as a buyer's agent. We help really level the playing field and represent the buyer in the transaction.
So you started Industry Insider in 2015, right?
Correct, October.
October. So when you start, I mean, obviously you were working for, it seemed like, a few groups prior to that, but when you started Industry Insider, what was the, what was consumer awareness like in Melbourne for buyer's agents? Like, did people know what buyer's advocate, I know you can't say buyer's advocates, like, did people know what they were?
I would say a very, very small percentage of the market knew what a buyer's advocate was. And the way that I built my brand in 2015 was purely and simply off the back of social media and referrals. As a selling agent will put photos up of the same brand every day or every week when they sell a property, because it's consistent with their branding. Every time I put a photo up, it was with a different brand, different company, and people were asking questions, why are you moving around so much? And it was pretty clear that I wasn't moving around. I was just representing the buyer and buying from different agencies. So the consumer awareness was very, very low at the time. And even social media at the time in 2015 in real estate, it wasn't, I would say, not many people were using it. So it was relatively new. So I had a lot of early traction with social media.
That's amazing. It's great that's already back then in 15, you were acquiring, like, seems like, clients and obviously just engaging with audience through social. Like, and that's organic social, right?
Correct. Yeah, it wasn't, definitely wasn't paid. And I've got the charity work to thank for my understanding of how social media worked, because working out of America, social media started in one of the colleges in America, and I was an early adapter And I utilized that through the charity to promote the charity and to promote awareness for the disease and the fact that we're raising funds across the country at the time. So when I came back to America as a PA, I started a Facebook page in 2010. I called it Andrew Date Real Estate. How ironic. And yeah, I remember at the time, I'm not going to name names, but someone said, no one uses social media for real estate. And I said, I think it's going to work. And this was like, that's 14 years ago. So that's pretty funny.
Wow. Yeah. You should give that person a call and say, hey, how'd that one play out? So you opened an office in Toorak last year. We were talking offline before we started. I love the, not that I've seen that many properties, but I love the property market in Melbourne. It's beautiful in terms of design, architecture. Where are you focusing on in areas, and like where is Industry Insider today as a business in terms of like just what you guys like? What's your jam?
Yeah, so our jam is buying family homes, $2 million and above, and capital growth investment properties. So really in Melbourne, you need $1 million to buy a capital growth asset, in my opinion, the type of properties we're buying. So family homes, good quality people. We've got 5 to 6 council regions that we focus on, Burundara, Stonington, Port Phillip, Glenira, Kingston, and the Mornington Peninsula. They're the areas that I know intimately and quite well. And now that we're in Toorak and in Stonington, the idea is to continue to grow in that higher price point, because I feel as I go up the price band, I feel I can add a lot of value to these clients. This week, we signed up a client at $3.5 million for a family home, and they're quite open to those areas that we're looking in. And in January, we signed up a client with a budget of $8 to $9 million, which is pretty exciting for the business to know that we're growing in that space where I believe we need to be.
And I mean, in Toorak, what would be like the median house price in Toorak?
Just over $5 million for a house in Toorak.
Wow. And so, is that part of like your strategy where you now want to just get into a higher price point?
That's part of the strategy. I also feel like competition is healthy in the sense that the amount of buyer's agents that are entering the industry, there's a lot now, which I think is great. I think the awareness is good. But I feel like that my skill set is more, because I've got close to 14 years of experience now, I'm feeling more comfortable at the higher price point than what you would at the very beginning. And I feel like I can add more value there. It's very hard to buy quality real estate in Melbourne because there's so much competition. And I also feel that, if I'm really honest, the top end of the market, there's only a few players that help buyers. There's very, very few. And I want to be one of those people that is known for adding value and getting the job done for his clients at the top end.
I think that's really smart. And I think that's really spot on. You're right. Like if you look, especially in Sydney, if you look at prestige, people focusing, even between 10 and 50, like there's maybe two mm-hmm. that do it. And to enter into that space is not easy. And once you're in that space and then you climb up the mountain, you're there. And so I think that's really smart. There is a group, right? I think it's Morell or something. Is that right? Morell?
Morell and Curran, they were one of the first buyers agents, buyers advocates in Melbourne. They've been around for a long time. They buy investment properties, and David, I think, does a lot of commentary at the top end. I think they're probably potentially winding down they've been in the industry for probably 25, 30 years, whereas I'm winding up, and I think a lot of people are. So I'm excited for the future.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because a lot of people, when we started CH like back in operational in 2010, a lot of people were like, oh, you were the first. And I'm like, no, like we weren't the first, like definitely not in Sydney as well, but also like Melbourne, like those guys were around way before us. And they seem like they had a good stronghold with the upper end of the market in Melbourne. Is that fair to say?
100%. And I think they still do quite a bit at that upper end, but there is really not a lot of buyer's agents at that top end. There really isn't, like you said earlier. And one of the people that I look up to in the industry and respect and luckily have been doing conjunctional work with him and his team, and it's been eye-opening, and it's one of the reasons why I believe I'm heading in the right direction, is Mal James. I think you've met Mal. He runs James Bicel, and he's also running Shelter by the Bay. He's been buying properties for 30-odd years, very experienced, and he's been a bit of a mentor to me, and so has his partner, Simone, who works for him. When I say partner, business partner. And, yeah, when I speak to Mal and I see what he's doing, I just sometimes get blown away, and I feel very lucky to have that relationship, and I think it's really important for new buyer's agents or even established buyer's agents to have mentors that will add value and give them different perspectives and takes on things, as opposed to being just one short-sighted, have a bit of a wider vision and collaborate, which I think is very smart.
Yeah. I mean, I think Mal's brilliant. I had a chat with him maybe 4 or 5 months ago, and whenever I speak with him, I learn like not one thing, I learn multiple things. And I think he's very far advanced in the industry. I think with what he does and how he thinks, I think he's really far ahead personally.
I'm quite impressed. He puts out weekly or fortnightly a newsletter, marketnews.com.au, and it's brilliant. It's thought-provoking. He doesn't have a filter. He'll say what he thinks. He's not going to sugarcoat it. And I appreciate that. And I think that has more cut through. And I'm starting to realize there's a balance, and you've only got to do it if you feel like it works for you. But yeah, one thing in real estate, you realize you can't please everyone.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't seem like the people pleasing type of person. He seems like he's really done well on the vendor advocacy side of things, from what I was trying to wonder. Because Sydney's not like Melbourne, where, I mean, Melbourne, it seems like you guys are very far ahead of us with vendor advocacy. From a buyer's agent point of view and a consumer point of view, I think in Sydney, it's very far behind. And when I spoke to him around how he was doing things, I was like, wow, like this is advanced.
Super advanced. Yeah. And at that top end, people think differently, and in the sense that a lot of these strategies make a lot of sense when you really break them down fundamentally. Like the co-list, where he'll be the listing agent, he'll charge 2% on $15 million, but then he'll offer 1% to the selling agent to bring the buyer. It spreads the net wider. And when you get to that top end of the market, you'll find it's very much relationship-based, and there's not a lot of people scrolling on realestate.com looking for 20, 30, 40, $50 million homes. A lot of them are transacted off market.
Yeah, so true. And I mean, he also focuses in prestige like you now, right?
Correct. Yeah, he's definitely prestige, and minimum price point Mal will probably take on is around that $5 million plus.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's fair enough. And so how are you feeling like now that you've been, I mean, you got that office in Toorak now and you're playing at that higher level, like are you enjoying it like you envisaged?
I am enjoying it. One of the biggest challenges is the volume. When you go to that higher level, the volume is a little bit lower in terms of how many deals you may do, especially early when you're pivoting. If I look back to 2021, when the cash rate was 0.25% and I was saying yes to almost everybody that wanted my services, I was running with 21 buyers in a part of 2021 at the one time with a team. An admin team, because I'm the sole buyer's agent at the moment. And I remember we brought 6 houses in one day in October 2021. So this year I haven't even brought a house, and it's February, but I'm not stressed because I've got a good amount of clients, but they're higher quality, like in higher price point clients, so it takes longer to transact. So I've never been a volume agent in the sense of some agents will buy 10, 20 properties a month. That's probably been the biggest challenge. I am enjoying it. I'm loving it.
Yeah. It is. I've been through similar what you're going through, which is as soon as you start going up, it does become less transactional. And it's sometimes a bit of a mental flip out because you feel like you're not doing anything, but really you are. And your commissions are more like things are working out better. But as long as you're enjoying it, that's great. And I mean, what is the, like the market like in Melbourne? Like, is it, has it kicked off? I mean, I'm very unfamiliar with the market there. Like, has it kicked off strong in what you focus in?
The demand is strong in the sense that there's a lot of buyers at the moment. I wouldn't say all the buyers are lining up to bid and pay well above market value like they were potentially doing when the cash rate was much lower. So there's a little bit of a, I think a lot of vendors are still unrealistic on their prices compared to what the buyers are prepared to pay. And if you ask me the same question in another 3 to 4 weeks, we'll have a lot more data around how Q1 is going to perform off the back of, like, January was very quiet in terms of auctions. Now February auctions are starting to ramp up. So the 24th of February is going to be a big test for the market. There's definitely still demand, and I think vendors need to realign with the market.
If you look back retrospectively, all the purchases you've done across all the areas that you've focused in, I'm just curious to know, like, what would be a rough percentage of those transactions are, like, off market or like just not on the market?
20-25%.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Melbourne's a very, very auction-focused market, right?
Extremely auction-focused. Yeah. Extremely, yeah. As you get higher in the price point in these areas, because there are less buyers, when you go up, like if you're looking at a $2 million property versus a $20 million property, a lot of people can afford $2 million, not a lot of people can afford $20 million. So as you go higher up, there might be boardroom auctions and private auctions and expressions of interest. The more buyers that are, like, the real estate selling agents in Melbourne are very, very good, especially when it comes to auctions. So they know how deep and wide the buyer pool will be on any given asset class. And whenever there's a quality asset that's going to have a deep, wide buyer pool, they'll take that property to auction, and buyers will typically be lining up. If the fundamentals are strong with the asset and it's priced accordingly, you'll have buyers there. And we know the auction process is heavily favoured towards the buyers. We've got strategy heavily favoured towards the sellers. We've got strategies as buyers agents to help mitigate that. But yeah, the auctioneers in Melbourne, most of them are very, very good, and it is a very much auction centric market.
Yeah, Melbourne knows how to put on an auction. I mean, if you're a buyer, you'd be Yeah, you need to have your wits about you because they're phenomenal. The auctioneers, the way they run, I've seen a few. I'm just like, this is impressive. Like, they know what they're doing, and I guess that leads me to my next question, right? Given that it's like Sydney is different, and some of these other, even Brisbane, where I would say more is trading off market. I mean, I've asked you what you're, but I would say I don't have data on this. I wouldn't know, but I'm assuming that more does trade off market. Whether that's right or wrong, I'm curious to know, like, what do you see as the real value adds of why people are coming to you, right? Like, when they engage you, whether you're buying something at auction or it's off market or whatever the campaign is, what do you really see as your true value add, you know, points?
Great question. And this is what I pitch every time I pitch to a client. So I feel like I'm in a listing presentation. I'll bring up my process and everything. Here we go. So I think the first and foremost is helping people save time. A lot of my clients are extremely busy running businesses. They've got families. Time is really one of the only commodities that you can't buy. You can always make more money, but you can't create more time. So time is definitely up there. Expertise and guidance around auction rules, asset class, areas, the fundamentals of a property, what they should be paying for a property. It's very difficult if you've only bought 2 or 3 homes in your life and you're about to spend $5 million on a house and it's quoted, say you've got a budget of $5 million, it's quoted 4.6 to $5 million. How do you know how to value that house unless you're a professional? Like, you really wouldn't know how to value it because there's not always apples for apples, especially at that price point. You can't just say the house around the corner was exactly the same and it sold for $5 million. I'm going to pay $5 million for this. So I think it's a it's a sphere of things that a good buyer's agent will add value to. We haven't even touched on the due diligence side of things with arranging building inspections and contract reviews to make sure that you're not taking on someone else's problem. So, yeah, it's extremely nuanced, but the negotiation skills also come to the table. If you're buying a property and there's only one buyer and you're that one buyer, how can you read through what the agent's saying versus what's actually really happening? The network and the trust that we have with the agents as well, that's really important. Because if you're a professional buyer and you don't have strong relationships with selling agents, you'll find it very difficult to be a buyer's agent that closes deals and helps clients, because they're the gatekeeper to the properties.
Yeah, there's some, I mean, I was just thinking when you were sharing some of those points, like the first one around time, the second one around quantifying value, and even just that last one around agent relationships. Like my wife and I are looking to buy something now in Bondi, and we engaged a buyer's agent. Like he's actually a friend of ours, someone I even coach. And like I'm out of the market in Sydney. Like I don't live there anymore. And I don't have the time. And the property that what you gave an example, like a property we're looking at as of today, like off market, there's no comparisons. Like it's really unique. And so I'd have no idea how to fucking value it. Like, and so I need input from that professional to give me information. And so totally resonate with what you're saying. And those agent relationships, I think a lot of buyers really misunderstand how important real estate agent relationships. I always used to tell people, like, I see real estate agents more important than clients. Like they're the conduit to buying a property, which gets the outcome for the client. And they also can be at times a referral partner, someone who introduces buyers to you. And so I see them as so important, but also just getting that information that you were sharing around negotiation. I just think that I think it's really misunderstood, that area.
Yeah, 100%. It is. And like there's good and bad agents out there. And like the good ones are extremely good and ideally don't want to be buying off them because I have to pay a premium. But the reality is most of the good agents get the good properties. So it's a fine line, and I think that's one thing. I think that's one of my strong suits is having good agent relationships.
Mm. Mm. And I mean, you were a former agent, so I think that's very, I always see people like you who come from that background, like it's very advantageous. Like you understand the fundamentals, you've been there. And so, yeah, you know more, especially than the average buyer's agent. Especially the average buyer, like you, I think you have a competitive advantage.
Yeah, understanding how office politics works, how commission splits work, how they're remunerated, all of that is really important information that not many people would actually know and understand unless they've worked on the inside of the industry. And that's one reason why I named my company Industry Insiders, because I've seen the inside of how the industry operates. And for example, a property that's listed online, if there's two agents online and you want to buy that property, you really want to be speaking with the listing agent, not the support agent, the listing agent who's got the relationship with the seller. The support agent might not have ever met the seller. So you want you want to be speaking with the listing agent who's got the relationship and the trust, because they're the gatekeeper to whether or not you'll sell the property. That's just one small thing.
I love that. And clearly it backs up that name, Industry Insider. I love that. On that note, we're going to finish up. Andrew, well done. I'm keen to see you smash out this prestige market. I'm sure in a few years' time, I'm going to see you absolutely dominating. Not that you're not dominating now. Great to catch and meet and to share notes.